Okay, we're back to different types of nidarim that you categorize people, right? You say, I'm not going to benefit from this category of people. And the question's going to be, who did you mean when you said that category? So our first one's going to be an interesting one. We'll see soon. Hanodir mishovtei Shabbat. So I'm going to make a neder from those who, right, again, how do you translate this? I'll say, although we'll see in a minute, not exactly. But it sounds like people who are shomrei Shabbat, right? They keep Shabbat. Asur b'Yisrael v'asur b'kutim. He's forbidden to a Yisrael, and he's forbidden to kutim. Who are kutim? Kutim are the Shomronim. Okay, they were the people that when after the Assyrians came and did the galut in and were magle machut Yisrael, they took. But their whole idea was displacement of people. So they
nothing.
So they took people from, you know, they took us, they moved us to Ashur, they took people from there, and they moved them into Israel. And then all of a sudden there was this plague of lions, and the people wanted to, you know, they found a Kohen who explained to them what to do, you know, and he said, oh, it must be because you're not keeping the laws of the land. So they took on the laws of the land. But we see throughout the Gemara that there's a whole bunch of different opinions about who these people were and what they were doing and what they weren't doing. So it seems clear that they weren't doing everything. It seems from here they were keeping Shabbat, and that's why if you're Nodir Mishavtei Shabbat, you're Asur B'Kutim, because Kutim are in that category. There's a group of them that exist nowadays. We've talked about them before. They actually do a Korban Pesach every year, so if you ever want to see a Korban Pesach being sacrificed, you can see. Okay, one of the things we're going to see very soon is that they didn't believe that Yerushalayim was the Makom Asher Yivchar Bo that says in the Torah, right? We know in the Torah it never says Yerushalayim. And they had it, you know, they took it that, oh, it must be Har Gerizim, and that's where their, you know, their temple was, and that's where they do their Korban Pesach now. And what's interesting, there's a few different tefisot about them. First of all, there's a machloket where they, you know, most people say they were Gerei Arayot, which means that they were forced conversion, which means that's not a true conversion, and we don't treat them as true converts. However, there were certain halachot that they did keep. So there were certain things that you could trust Kutim for and certain things you couldn't. It also seems that as time went on, there was a hidar derut, you know, they weren't exactly doing things the way they were originally, and therefore also the perspective toward them changed.
They did keep Shabbat.
So according to the Mishnah, at least in that time period, they kept Shabbat. Me'ochle shum. Okay, what about those who eat garlic? Okay, we'll talk about this in a minute. Asur b'Yisrael v'asur b'kutim. Okay, also Jews and also Kutim had this custom to eat garlic. Now, either we say, oh, it's just things they ate because they believed that this was good for them, and it was like a perspective, you know, on healthy foods, and we've seen all around the Gemara, they talk about what foods are healthy and what foods aren't healthy, and, you know, it could be that garlic was one of these foods that they believed, those kind of people believed that, you know, the Jews and the Kutim believed that this was important to eat. The other perspective is, now, Ezra made a takana that you're supposed to eat shum on Friday nights, because you're supposed to have sex on Friday nights, and the garlic makes your sperm more active, pungent. So, anyway, it could be, if it's that interpretation, that it wasn't just Jews that kept to this takana of Ezra, and also the Kutim kept to this. Okay. Whether it's for religious reasons or not religious reasons, you know, go with it where you want. Me Olei Yerushalayim Asur B'Yisrael Mutar B'Kutim. If you talk about the Olei Yerushalayim, now we're already going to exclude the Kutim because they believed in the Har Gerizim and not in the Yerushalayim. Okay. My Shovtei Shabbat. So now the Gemara asks, what does it mean Shovtei Shabbat? Ilema, if you want to say it means like we thought, mi mekayme Shabbat, right? Anyone who keeps Shabbat, my iriya b'kutim, afilu of de kochavim nami. Here's a great line. What does that mean? It means if you say those who observe Shabbat, well, it shouldn't have said only kutim, because also non-Jews observe Shabbat. And what does that mean, non-Jews observe Shabbat? So, first of all, there's a debate among the Christian scholars whether early Christians kept Shabbat or not, because it is in the Old Testament, and they kept certain things in the Old Testament. So it could be that in their time, they were actually keeping Shabbat. You know, possibly even, maybe not Kehilchata Torah Shabbat Peh, but Kehilchata Lefiat Torah. Okay, so that's one way of reading it. Another way of reading it just could be, you know, they use it as a day of rest, you know, as a general day of rest and not necessarily Mekayim Shabbat. But I think the first interpretation makes more sense because we don't generally call Mekayim Shabbat people who just chill out on Shabbat, right? That's not really what we would call it. So could be that Avdei Kochavim, that particularly Christians, were keeping Shabbat. And then they would say basically that should apply to them. So what do they answer? Ela, what does it mean? Mi mitzuvim al ha-Shabbat. It means those commanded to keep the Shabbat. Okay? So then it means hanoder mishavtei Shabbat is those who were commanded to keep Shabbat. So that means Jews, which would then also obviously include Jews who don't keep Shabbat.
Okay?
Which we're going to see another mishnah that says exactly that, where it's a certain category, and even if you're not part of that category, befall, you didn't do what it says, but we're just assuming that that terminology is a term that just includes all Jews, whether or not they're observant or not. So now, although we're going to see here, this, well, maybe only as a whole categorization, okay, we'll see in a minute. So elam mitzvim al Shabbat, but then ihachi em asefa. But then look at the end; it says me'ole Yerushalayim asur v'Yisrael mutar b'kutim. Amai v'hamitzvim ninhu. Aren't the kutim also mitzvim to come to Yerushalayim? Just because they don't do it, right? If we're going to say that mekayimei Shabbat or those shoftei Shabbat or those who are commanded in Shabbat, then we'll say ole Yerushalayim or those who are commanded, and the kutim are also commanded. So what do they answer? Amar Abaye mitzuve ve'ose katani. Right? It's both. It means you're commanded and you do it. Which doesn't necessarily contradict what I just said a minute ago about Jews who don't keep, because they're talking about categories of people who are commanded and who keep it. So when it comes to Shabbat, so both Kutim and Jews are commanded and they generally keep it, even if a particular one doesn't. Okay? But when it comes to Olei Yerushalayim, Jews as a category all do go to Yerushalayim, and Kutim as a general category don't go to Yerushalayim. So Kutim Mitzvim Vos. So Abai says Mitzvah Vosa Katane. Bitarte Babe Kamaita. So now that you're saying the first two parts of the Mishnah, okay, the Shoftei Shabbat and the Ochle Shum, Yisrael Vakutim Mitzvim Veosin. Okay, this would make it also more likely if you're talking about. Well, right. Although mitzuvim could still mean they were commanded from a health perspective. You could sort of, but yeah, it definitely makes more sense if you're talking about Takanat Ezra. Of dekochavim, hahu de'avde osin ve'ena mitzuvim. Right? Those who do it, but they're not commanded. And bo'olei Yerushalayim, Yisrael mitzuvim ve'osim, and kutim mitzuvim ve'ena mosim. Okay, so in Olei Yerushalayim, Jews are commanded and they do it, and Kutim are commanded, but they don't keep it, and that's why they're excluded.
So that's just from the last part.
The last part. That's why Kutim were different there. Okay, new Mishnah. Konam she'eni nehenel l'b'nei Noach. So now the question is, what do you mean by B'nei Noach? Are Jews included in B'nei Noach? So what does it say here? Mutar b'Yisrael v'asur b'ovdei kochavim. Because Jews are not included in B'nai Noach. B'nai Noach means non-Jews. Okay? So now the Gemara is going to ask, Yisrael, mi nafik miklal B'nai Noach, right? What do you mean? How could Jews not be part of B'nai Noach? Of course we're the sons of Noach. So what do they say? Kevan de'ikdash Avraham, itkaru al shmei. We're called the sons of Avraham. We're no longer called the sons of Noach. It's B'nai Noach is a term, again, this is all, not what's the reality. Yes, of course we're B'nai Noach, but when people say B'nai Noach, they mean non-Jews. Okay. She'eni neheneh le'zera Avraham. So let's say someone says, I'm not neheneh from Zera Avraham. Now what's going to be the issue here? There's two types of Zera Avraham, right? There's those who come from Yitzchak, and there's those who come from Yishmael. So what do they say? Asur b'Yisrael mutar b'ovdei kochavim. It's only when you say Zera Avraham, you're only referring to Jews. So the Gemara is going to ask, v'ha'ika Yishmael, what about him? So it says, ki b'Yitzchak yikarei lecha Zera. Okay, k'tiv. Okay, because it says, ki b'Yitzchak yikarei lecha Zera, that Zera Avraham, right, it's called on Yitzchak. So then they say, wait a minute, v'ha'ika Esav, but if you're going to go by Zera Yitzchak, then there's still Esav, and all of that dome comes from Esav. So what about them? So they say, look carefully at the pasuk we just read, ki bi Yitzchak, velo kol Yitzchak, because it says in Yitzchak, meaning in a particular part of Yitzchak. Okay? And therefore, the assumption is, right, this again, the Gemara could have answered this very simply, which is, it's, right, v'nidarim halach achar b'nei Adam, right, achar l'shom b'nei Adam. It doesn't matter what's actually true and what comes from the Torah or not. It's a matter of what people mean when they say this kind of a phrase. Okay? Next Mishnah. She'eni nehene miYisrael. Let's say you say that. Now we're away from this lashon. Now we're getting into a few different cases here. Okay, now you can use your sheets. This is a more complicated. Okay, if you say I'm not going to get benefit from any Yisrael, so now if you want to buy something from him, are you allowed to?
Yes.
Or if you want to sell something to him, are you allowed to? Why do you say yes?
Mission. You can buy it to him as more than it's worth. You can sell it for less than it's worth.
Exactly. Okay, so she'eni nehenem Yisrael lokech biyoter. You can buy something from him as long as you pay more than the price. And then you're not benefiting from him necessarily because you're actually having to shell out more money than you would otherwise. Umochir bepachot. And you can sell something, but for less than its value. You have to imagine, right? Everything was selling, right? That's how people made their business. So if you say, I'm not going to get benefit from anyone, how can you do it now, right? Like, we need to find a way out, a way for you to be able to buy. So that's what they say. If you buy it for more than it's worth, or you sell something for less than it's worth. Let's say you say, She'Yisrael nehenim li. No Jews are going to get benefit from me. So lokech b'pachot u'mochir b'yoter. So then, since it's the flip, right, he can buy for less, and he can sell for more. But what does the Mishnah say? Ve'ein shomin lo. But nobody lets him do this. Because what did he do? He made this statement that put everyone else in a corner and put him in an advantageous position. Right now, he can say to someone, well, look, you can't get benefit from me, so you got to sell it to me for more money. You got to sell it to me for less money. Or you got to buy this from me for more money because you can't get benefit from me. What do you mean? You created this situation. So there's actually different nuschaot. Is it ve'ein shomin lo, or is it ve'im shomim lo? In other words, only if they're going to listen to him, then this is what they'd have to do to keep it. But anyway, it's different explanations what exactly this means. But clearly, it's the situation that he created that just benefits him, and therefore, it's not a really good situation. What if he says, she'eini nehene lahem behein li? Then, right, it's mutually exclusive. He can't, right? Each side can't do anything now. They're stuck. Because if one sells for more, it's going to benefit the other, right? And if one's, so it's going to benefit him. And if he sells for less, it's going to benefit the other one. So basically, he's stuck. So what are the answers? Yehene lo v'dei kochavim. Okay, he's got to do his wares, his selling only with non-Jews. He's basically stuck. He can't do sales with Jews. Here's just an interesting mission in terms of what you see. The obvious that they were doing business among themselves mostly. That was the preferred option. And then, you know, only if, right, which nowadays, not true. I mean, yes, there's people in business who prefer to do something with Jews, but, you know, the market's a way open market. People don't have this concept anymore of...
Sometimes the opposite. People prefer to do it with non-Jews.
Okay, that could also, sometimes.
That way they don't...
Right, like they're not connected,
like you have to do a special bargain with them, which is, it's business.
Right.
It's not personal.
Right. So in those days, clearly that wasn't the case. Also, there was, you know, the relationship with non-Jews was sometimes complicated, and, you know, they probably didn't want to be involved so much, you know, in case they got cheated, it would cause problems. Okay. Now we're going to get to a halacha of Shmuel. Amar Shmuel, halokeach kli min ha'uman levakro, v'ne'enas biyado chayav. Okay, what does this mean? You take a kli from someone, okay, let's say you go to buy a car and you take it for a test drive. You haven't bought the car yet, okay, you're taking it levakro, to check it out. V'ne'enas, and you get into a car crash. So, are you chayav or not? So what does Shmuel say? You're chayav. If you crash that car during the test drive, it's your responsibility. So what can we infer from the Din of Shmuel? Which is going to create a problem for our Mishnah. Alma kasavar hana'at lokeachi. Who's chayav and onsin in Dine Shomrim? Okay, we're going to get all into this in Bava Metzia. Who's chayav and Din Shomrim?
For ones.
A shoel, a borrower. Okay? The borrower is chayav for onsin. So what's a borrower? It's kolana ashalo, right? You borrow something, you get entire benefit from it. And that's why... Because you're getting this benefit, you are now mechayev ba'onsin. So that's what they say. So what's the assumption now? It must be that in a sale, who benefits more? The buyer. The buyer is the one who gets hana'ah. Okay? And here you see it, because when he borrowed something, when he took something to possibly buy, right, and he borrowed it, so to speak, right, he ended up in that category. So you see that the buyer is the one who gets the benefit.
Well, okay. Maybe just at that stage is when the buyer gets the benefit.
Right. You could say that. Right. But what they're But what they're saying is the fact that you're in the process of buying and in the end you ended up, right? Right. I mean, there is some logic to it. But the real logic behind it is what? That a seller can sell to a million people, right? He's got his pick of who he wants to, everyone's coming to buy from him. So it's not a major benefit whether you buy or whether you buy. What does it matter to him? It's the buyer. You walk home with that object, you're the one who has that, right? Think about it. You go into a store, are they so thrilled that they made a sale that they sold you a dress? You're happy when you go home and you bought that dress, but do they care whether they made the sale with you? They would have sold it to somebody else. Okay, now obviously, and we're going to get into this, we're going to have to distinguish between items that are easy to sell and items that are tough to sell, okay? But in a basic item, right, the assumption is that it's more the benefit on the buyer. So now, what happens here? This noise is really annoying. okay, Tanan. So now we're going to have a question on this. Tanan. She'eni nehene Mishrael mocher b'pachot, aval shaveh b'shaveh lo. Okay, now look at the chart. No, I didn't put it in the chart yet. Okay, so now, if you do shaveh b'shaveh, right? Let's say you sell it exactly for its worth. So what did we say? If you say, I'm not going to benefit from a Yisrael, you can only sell an item for less than its worth, but you can't sell it for shaveh. But didn't we just say that the buyer doesn't really get so much benefit? So you're not benefiting. If you sold it to the guy for a shaveh, you didn't really benefit because you sold it, right? It's not your benefit. It's the benefit of the buyer. So it should be only if you sold it for more, right? Think about it. If you go into a store and you buy the dress exactly for what it's worth, so fine, they sold it to you. They could sell it to anyone. If you come in and you say, oh, I love this dress. I'm going to spend more than what it's worth, then they're already making a good sale on you. They're excited. If they sell it for what they were going to, it's not such a big deal. So therefore, shaveh b'shaveh should be fine. And it doesn't say that. It only says, mocher b'yoter. So, I'm sorry, mocher b'pachot. So, I hana'at lokechi apilu shaveh b'shaveh. It should be fine. So what do they answer? Matnitin bizvina derame al ape. Our Mishnah must be that something that was really a miserable
demand.
Right. Okay? Nobody wanted to buy it. And therefore, it's even hana'al mocher if he sells it for its price, for its worth. Okay? So now, they're going to say, if you want to say, though, that it's talking about a case, okay, you can look at the chart now. I made two arrows, okay? We're going to now see, if you say that it's talking about izvina derame al ape, something that's very hard to sell, then we're going to assume all the other cases are the same. And then we're going to have a question, both on the first case, Eni Nehemi L'Yisrael Lokech Biyoter, and on the case where Shisrael Nehemim Li Mocher Biyoter Ve, okay? Ve'en Shomim. So now, what's the question here? So, Im Ken, Ema Resha Lokech Biyoter, Ve'od Ema Seifa Shisrael Nehemim Li Lokech B'Pachot Mocher Biyoter, Ve'ibizvini Derame Al Ape Afilu Shaveh B'Shaveh. Okay, both these cases should be shaveh al shaveh. It's bizvini derame al ape. So let's go through the cases. If you say she'eni nehenemi Yisrael, I'm not going to get any benefit from anyone, and then you go and you buy it from, let's say it's something that doesn't sell very well, and you go and you buy it for shaveh b'shaveh, right? Which according to this you can't, right? But if you go buy something shaveh b'shaveh for something that that nobody really wants to buy, so that's not really hana'ah for you. Okay? Because if nobody else really wants to buy it, and he's selling it to you for its, right, let's say, okay, in a case where nobody wants to buy it, oh, sorry, let's take a regular case. In a case where everybody wants to buy this, so only if you pay more are you allowed, because then you're not really getting benefit, because then you have to shell out more money. But in a case where nobody wants to buy it, to pay the exact price is also a benefit, right? Is also a, one second, right? You're also benefiting at that point, okay? Because he can't even sell it for the lower price, right? So you should, in theory, be able to buy this for a lower value. So the fact that you're paying more for it, one second, right? She'eni nehenemi Yisrael. So you can, right, if you're not going to get benefit, you can only buy it for, if you were to buy it for Shaveh B'Shaveh, you'd be getting a worse deal there. Okay? In other words, normally we say if you buy it for the regular price, you're not getting a bad deal, right? The whole idea is you have to get a bad deal.
Yeah.
Okay? So even buying something that nobody wants to sell for the list price is a bad deal. Okay? Because this item can go for a lot less. So basically, you should be allowed to be lokach b'shaveh b'shaveh, if we said that. And in the flip case, if we say she Yisrael nehenim li, right, that no Jews can get benefit from me, and then you sell it, this item that nobody wants to buy, for the list price, again, they're getting benefit because, right, they should, again, it's right, it's the same thing. They're now the lokach, and they're paying the price, right? They're already paying more than what they should be paying. Okay? So in those cases, shaveh b'shaveh, it should be shaveh b'shaveh also. Okay? So now, what do they say? So what do they answer? Seifa bizvina harifa. Okay, it must be in those cases, it's talking about a zvina harifa. What's a zvina harifa? Goes quick,
yeah,
right? An item that goes really quick. And then that would be the case, okay? Shaveh b'shaveh wouldn't work. So they say, wait a minute. Ihachi lokeach b'pachot afilu shaveh b'shaveh. If you're going to say that, okay, now look back at the next chart on the page. Okay, so here, what do they say basically? She'eni nehenem Yisrael b'zvini d'rami al'apeh. And Shisrael Nehenim Li is Bizvina Harifa.
Okay.
I'm just realizing that they didn't answer the question on the Lokach Biyoter in the first case.
Yeah.
So how do they answer that? One second, I missed that. One second. There's something here. Right, it doesn't, right, it's saying it doesn't, right, it only answers the second question. Yeah. Okay, fine. It doesn't answer this first question. They just kind of ignore the first question, okay? It's a problem with the Gemara here. It just doesn't relate to the first question at all. Okay, so then they say, the Reisha is something that sells quickly, doesn't sell quickly at all, and the Seifa is something that sells very quickly. So now they say, but wait, but look at the first part of the second case. The second case is Shisrael Nehenimli, right? The second, and it's Vina Harifa. But if you're Lokach B'Pachot, right, also it should work if it goes very quickly and you say, no one can get benefit from me, so he can buy it, he should be able to buy something for its price,
yeah.
Right? Because he's not benefiting them anymore, right? I feel like, it's Hana Ale Lokach. He's the one who's benefiting from getting it, and
yeah.
not them.
Yeah.
In that case, he becomes the beneficiary and not the konet. So why does it only say lokeach b'pachot? Okay, right? If there's an item that's selling in the shuk and everybody wants to buy it, if you're the lucky one, right, you're getting the hana'ah, whether you pay, you know, less or whether you pay the exact price. So, filu shaveh b'shaveh. So what do they answer? Ela matnitim bizvina metzia. Okay, so now they reject all these explanations, and they say it must be that all the cases of the Mishnah, and that's why it didn't really bother the Gemara that they didn't answer that other question, because in the end, they didn't accept these answers. In the end, they rejected the whole theory, and they say, matnitim bizvina mitzia, it's just a regular average, you know, item, and that's why shaveh b'shaveh never works, okay? It either has to be more or less. And what about the fact that Shmuel said Hana'at Lokeachu, and therefore if it's Hana'at Lokeachu, then there should be a case of Shaveh B'Shaveh, right? Where, so now, what do they answer? To Shmuel Bezvina Harifa. Shmuel, when he said the Hana'at is to the Lokeach, okay, Lokeach Kliman Ha'uman, he was only talking about Azvina Harifa. If you take something that goes very quickly in the shuk. So basically, if you're going to test drive a car that is just a regular car, and then it's not your benefit, okay? It's only if you're going to test drive a car that's the hot item and everybody wants to buy it, then you're going to be responsible for ONC. Okay? Interesting, right? Because now we're taking Shmuel's halacha and making it very... but basically what happens is they took Shmuel and they said, well, Shmuel doesn't work with this Mishnah. So it must be Shmuel was only talking about a particular case. Right? Often we do the flip. We say, if Shmuel doesn't work with the Mishnah we do an akimta to the Mishnah. Here we're doing an akimta to Shmuel. Tanya kavate de Shmuel. Now we're going to see a braita that goes like Shmuel. Halokeh kelim min ha-tagar l'shagram le-beit chamif. You take kelim. This is interesting, right? This never really going to happen. I guess, I don't know, maybe you could say it's the same. But you buy something from a storekeeper, and you say, I'm buying this as a gift for my father-in-law. Okay, but I don't know for sure he's going to like it. So I'm borrowing it, and maybe I'll return it. In theory, you could say all our sales are like this, because in theory, you can always return, right? So until you actually start using the item, maybe it's in this category, in theory. Right? Like, since, I mean, it depends where you live. Return policies in Israel are not as good as return policies in America. But, so you take this kelim. So now it's almost very similar to the test drive. Because, yes, you bought it, but you haven't totally acquired it because you've told the guy, I might bring it back. Va'amarlo, im mekablim otam mimeni, right? I should have read this before, right? Before I explained it. If they take it from me, ani notan l'cha demehem, I'll pay you the money. I guess he didn't pay him the money yet. Okay? V'im lav, ani noten lecha lafi tovat hana'a shebahem. Okay? If not, I'll give you, what is he going to give him now? He says, I'll pay you the benefit of the hana'a that I got from this. Now, what hana'a did he get from it? So most of the first say, he went to his father-in-law's house with a gift. Now, it could be the father-in-law doesn't like the gift, but he gets brownie points for that. Okay?
It's just a slippery slope because who can you evaluate? How do you evaluate? And it depends on what it is.
Right.
And if there's any wear and tear, and if it's a car. Just say you take a car and you have 30 days. You usually have 30 days to turn it.
So you put mileage on it. Right.
So it's hard to evaluate for sure.
So anyway, right, Tovat Hana'a is generally a very broad term. There was another explanation for Tovat Hana'a, I'm trying to remember. So Rashi says here, because he says to the storekeeper, I'll pay you something because you were so nice to me that you're letting me do this. Okay? So it's not necessarily the hana he's getting from giving his father-in-law a gift, it's the hana he's getting from the storekeeper that he's letting him do this. Okay? So now, what happens if ne'ensu? Okay? So now, ne'ensu b'halicha, if he's on his way to his father-in-law's house, then chayav. B'chazara patur, mipnei shehu kenosei sachar. Okay, this is a very interesting thing. What do they say? While he's on the way to give the gift, so it's basically like his, right? Kol od, right? Innocent until proven guilty. I don't know. This is yours until you prove otherwise. So it's like your item right now. So basically, what do you see here? This is the main part you see. That the hana, right? Just like Shmuel said, the hana'a lokeachu, right? The lokeach is the one benefiting. And that's why when he takes it with the intent to be the koneh, he's getting benefit, and therefore he has to pay ones, because he's like a shoal. Okay? But on the way back already, all he's doing is returning this item, right? Who does it own? Who owns it right now? He doesn't own it at all. The storekeeper owns it because he's just returning basically something that belongs to the storekeeper.
So
and then he's like a shomer sachar at that point. He becomes, that's what an osei sachar is, he's like a shomer sachar. He's like someone who's getting a salary, right? He's not actually getting paid, but he's getting paid behana'at. He's gotten benefit from it, and he's now returning it to its original owner.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with the storekeeper. As soon as he took it out of the store, it's in his pocket. It's his property. He's responsible for it.
Right.
As far as the storekeeper is concerned, he doesn't care whether he's on the way, but he's given it to him to lend it to him. Once again, if you take a car and you bring it back, and on the way back from home to return it, something happens to it. It's still
right. So according to this, if you decided you didn't want the car anymore after you drove it, you didn't like the way it was, so then you're not getting any right.
And that's, but it's still.
But think about it. It actually makes sense.
It's
your responsibility. But the question is, who's the beneficiary? Who's getting benefit here, really? You wanted to take this car to test drive, okay? You didn't want to take responsibility for the car. You wanted to see how it drove. You actually hate the car. It's a terrible car. The storekeeper was the one who convinced you, like, go take this car and see. Maybe you'll like it. It's almost like his fault. I don't want this car. I have nothing to do with this car anymore. When I make that switch in my head, it's no longer mine. Right? I don't want it anymore. And therefore,
well, that's your mental switch. It's not illegal.
Like, but you never owned it. You never bought it. You never owned it. So why should you... Exactly. So the status changes from a shoel to a shomer sechar. And then, right. And then you're not chayav in onus. Right? You can argue with
it. That's
why
you sign documents now whenever you take it. Really?
Right.
Just because in your head you decided you don't like this. You told me I'd like it, but I didn't, so I'm going to return it. And something happens.
Right. But it shows here that what you're... What, now, yes, it's true. There's actions here. It's not just in your mind. Although, who's to know? Right. So when it's to the when it's the test drive, it's more complicated. But when it's the father-in-law, you know if you're bringing it back, you're already on your way back.
What happens if you stop someplace on your way back? You stop someplace. You didn't go directly back. You stopped someplace and you left the bag somewhere.
Right. But still, at this point, you're a shomer. But you're a shomer sechar. That's the thing. At this point, you're in a different category. Yes, you're still watching his item. But you're not watching a midin shoel that you're benefiting from it. You're watching a midin. You're a shomer sechar. That's the whole idea.
Well, why would anyone ever let you? Why would anyone?
So
let
that's
you
a good question.
That?
Why would you? Get, why would you not?
Enter into a situation.
It's true.
Perhaps sell.
Exactly. You want the sale. Okay. So now we're going to see another story.
And it has to be something that's not easy to sell.
Right. So in the end, right. That's how they explain shoel.
There's something in high demand that I would never. You wouldn't let someone leave your store. If you know that, you know what, I don't need to let him do it because someone's going to walk through any minute and buy it and not have to take
exactly.
it to the test run.
Right, you could say that. So, right, in the end, we did explain Shmuel that way, and now we're saying this bright is like Shmuel. So the question is, do we have to understand this bright that it's Bezvina Harifa or not necessarily? Okay. Hahu Safsira. Now here there was a middleman. Okay, he said, I'll take your items, I'll sell them for you. Okay? Deshaka Chamer Lizvune. Velo hisben, he tried to sell this chamor and he couldn't sell it. Bahade dahadar itnis. Now he's on his way back to bring the chamor back, and an ones happens. Okay, itnis chamra, the chamor dies. Let's say, chayve Rav Nachman l'shlome. Rav Nachman said you're responsible. So etive Rav l'Rav Nachman. Wait a minute, it says in the sprite we just learned, Nensu, Bahalicha, Chayav, Bahazara, Patur. He's already on his way back. Who's the owner of this item now? The Chamor, right? He took responsibility for it just while he was going to sell it, but now he's not going to sell it anymore. So what's their answer? This is a great answer. Amrale, Chazara de Safsira, Holachahi. Di Lumishkach Lizvune, Afilo Ababa de Beite, Milo Mazvinle. While it's true he's going to bring it back, but he's a middleman. He's trying to sell this item. He'll try stopping anybody on the street at any given point. And if anyone agrees, while he's on his way back to buy the thing, of course he's going to sell it. So even though he's on his way back, it's not the same as the on the way back from the father-in-law's house. On the way back from the father-in-law's house, it's clear. This guy is not so clear. He might still sell it. And therefore, Kotlodi hasn't walked into the door of the guy and brought him back his chamor, and the potential is there for him to sell it. I was thinking when we went to Vietnam, like, people will sell you anything off their bodies, off their, like, everything is for sale, you know? Like, their shirt they would take off. I mean, they would, like, literally, anyone who was willing to buy anything from them, they would sell. So I was thinking about it like this, right? In other words, this guy is so desperate to sell, right? He wants to sell this. He'll sell anytime, anywhere. He doesn't care. Let's say he went to a shuk, and he didn't sell in the shuk, so he'll walk home, and he'll stop people on the street, and he'll ask them. Like, that's what happened to us. We would be stopped on the street. Anything. You want to buy this? You want to buy that? You want to buy that? You know? That was the attitude there. So you could imagine this also.
But they also say here that it's because we have to assume that the donkey was in high demand, even in this case.
Uh-huh.
So once again, you're dealing with what... I don't think it's very straightforward. I think it depends on what...
But if it was in such high demand, then how come he couldn't sell it? That's weird, right?
Maybe he was a terrible salesman. Maybe he was crooked. Maybe he tried to sell it for more than it was worth, and maybe...
Look, I think you have to keep in mind that the Gemara was stuck, and they answered that this is the case, that that's Vina Metzia and that's Vina Harife. But I'm not so sure that all the sources have to... And the Mefarshim will try to fit them into that those categories, because that's when the Gemara got stuck and they couldn't answer up a question. That's what they... But, you know, we always know there's other answers. You could say there were different perspectives. And it doesn't necessarily mean that just because that's what they answered, the Shmuel Zadina Harifa, that all these other sugyas that they're talking about all have to fit in with that also. Okay? It's not even clear that that's what Shmuel meant. It's just the way the Gemara explained Shmuel. Right? You have to always remember to distinguish between the levels of what's going on here. There's what the guy said, and then there's what, when the Gemara was pushed into a corner, what they had to answer up about him. It's not necessarily that he meant that. So it's true it says that there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's the only way to read this, these sources.
I thought when we were distinguishing between something high demand or low demand, we were only talking about the situation of a neder, meaning what did I mean by the neder and can I sell for more or for less? Mm-hmm. In this case of who's chayev, is it necessary to say high demand or low demand, or are we just talking about the status of the person?
So that's what they were saying, that is Shmuel, who said if you take something to test drive and it's onus, proves that what? That the ha'ah is all on the lokech and not on the mocher. So that depends on low demand, right? If it's low demand, then there is a benefit to the mocher if he sells it. If he can't sell an item and then he gets to sell it, that's obviously going to benefit him.
So that's how they explain the way Shmuel.
It's a two-way street. There's a mocher, there's a konel. Like, who's benefiting more? That's really what the discussion is. And it does vary on what type of sale you're talking about. And it could be also, like Deb, like you said before, it could depend what kind of item you're selling. Is it an expensive item? Is it a cheap item? Is it, you know, how much, right? Like, how much does a new dress mean to you? Is it, you know, or some people it means a lot. Some people, they buy a new dress every, you know, it's not a big deal. So it depends on the person. It depends on the item. It depends on who they're buying it from. Yeah, there's so many factors here that it's very hard to give blanket categories. And the Gemara tries to give blanket categories, but it's hard.
But also, if you think about it, if this donkey, which they say was in, you have to assume it was in high demand, if it was, then why would he need a middleman? You also have to look at it that way. If people really wanted donkeys, then he should have even needed a middleman.
Maybe he has a ton of them and he can't.
I just feel like sometimes they just.
I think it's hard to imagine that this case was really in high demand because then he should have been able to sell it.
Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't make sense that he couldn't sell it, so it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Okay, new case. Konam sha'ani nehenela arelim. Okay? You say, I'm not going to get benefit from people who have brit milah. Mutar ba'arle Yisrael. If there's someone. Mutar b'le Yisrael v'asur b'mulei avdei kochavim. Okay? If you're... the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get benefit from the Ariel from people not or are uncircumcised. So he's mutar for uncircumcised Jews, and he's asur for circumcised avdei kochavim. Okay? Because why? Because he didn't really mean circumcised, uncircumcised. What did he mean? He meant, when he said uncircumcised, he meant it as a derogatory, right? It was a derogatory term that he used for non-Jews. It was just a way of saying non-Jews, uncircumcised people. Okay? He didn't mean specifically the circumcision, you know, itself. Okay? Now, there's a whole interesting, really interesting machloket here about when you say Arlei Yisrael, who do you mean? Do you mean non-Jews who couldn't have a brit milah because, you know, their two brothers died from brit milah and then you don't give a brit milah to the third brother? Or, you know, cases where they couldn't have a brit milah for halachic reasons? Or are you talking about people who, bechavana, on purpose, didn't have a brit milah? And some people say when you say uncircumcised, it could be you're including those Jews who don't keep, you know, who don't even circumcise themselves. So there's a big machloket about how to perceive, you know, this word Arle Yisrael, does it mean Elu b'chavana or not b'chavana, you know? Has a different implication. Which is obviously, you know, our perspective on people who don't keep mitzvot, right? It's like a whole... It has to do, I guess, with how you explain that, about what your perspective is on Jews who don't keep mitzvot. She'eni nehaneh lemulim. Okay, so now you say, I don't benefit from people who have brit milah. Asur ba'arle Yisrael, okay, it's forbidden to all Jews, even if they don't have a brit milah, even though they're not circumcised, and you said only circumcised. Umutar b'mulei avdei kochavim, that's the exact flip. She'en ha'orla kriya ela l'shem avdei kochavim, okay, because orla relates to avdei kochavim, it's just like a term people use. She'ne'amar, again, even though they say halach v'nedarim l'shom b'nei adam, they're using psukim, okay. So some of the Pershim say when they have a pasuk, so they use it. When the pasuk contradicts, then they say, oh no, we don't follow the pasuk. Shenemar ki kol hagoyim arelim v'chol beit Yisrael arle lev. Okay, this is a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, and he says all the goyim are arelim, but Yisrael are arle lev. In other words, they're not, they're mulim, they're circumcised, but their hearts are uncircumcised. It's a bad nivuah about Bnei Yisrael, but it says here that the goyim are all arelim. Okay, so even if they're circumcised, ve'omer v'hayah klishti ha'arel hazeh. Ve'omer pentis machna b'no plishtim penta alosna b'not ha'arelim. You see that arelim is synonymous with non-Jews. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omer, Meusa hi ha'orla shenitgenu ba'rishaim. Okay, here he says the orla is despicable because rishaim are condemned by it. Shenemar ki kol ha'goyim arelim. Okay, he uses that pasuk to say that to be uncircumcised is maus. Rabbi Yishmael omer gedola mila. So now we're going to say the flip, right? To be arel is terrible, is despicable, but to be mal is so great, okay? Gedola mila shenechretu ala shlosh esrei britot. Okay, 13 britot were. Okay, what does this mean? The word brit appears in the text when it talks about the commandment for brit milah to Abraham. The word brit appears in the text 13 times. So they say that there were 13 britot that were nechretu, right? That God made 13 covenants over brit milah. Okay, now we're going to see all sorts of comments about brit milah. Rabbi Yossi omer gedola mila shedoche et haShabbat. Okay? Milah is so great that it can even push off Shabbat, right? You have a brit milah that's bizmanah, you do it on Shabbat. Shabbat ha-chamura. Okay? Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha omer, gedola milah shelo nitna lo l'moshe tzadik aleha melo sha'a. That Moshe, when he didn't do brit milah for his son, and we're going to get into this story now in the Gemara, we're going to start today, get into it more tomorrow, about when Moshe, remember, he was by Hibaderach Babalon, and then the Malach comes, right, and he gets punished because he didn't do Brit Milah. So they say they didn't even wait an hour, he got punished immediately on it. So you see how important it was that even Moshe had tzaddik, right, all his chuyot didn't come up to him, the Malach came and wanted to kill him right then and there. Rabbi, right, and then what happens, right, Tzipora comes and does it and resolves the issue. Right, very interesting story, we're going to get into some parshanut of it tomorrow. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Gedola Mila Shedoche Et HaNigaim. Okay, it pushes off Nigaim. Okay, this is that if you have a Nega, and you, right, what is it? Even if you have Tzara'at there, you're allowed to cut off, right, we've actually learned this in Shabbat. You're not allowed to cut the, I forgot how this works. You're not allowed to cut off Tzara'at. I think that's what it is. And this you're allowed to.
You are.
Right, that's what it is. You're not allowed to cut a tzara'at, a negat tzara'at, but in this case, if the tzara'at is in the makom or la, then you're allowed to cut it off. That's what it means. Okay, and they darshan it from a pasuk of, where's the pasuk here? Vayhi b'yom ha'shmini yimol. So they say, even if there's baheret, yikot. Why the hell did they learn it from a pasuk? I forget the drasha, how it works. Second. Yimol basar orlato, right? Even if his basar has something on it, in any case, yimol basar orlato. They darshan it from the word basar or something. Okay, next. Rebbe omer, gedola mila shekol mitzvot shasa Abraham Avinu lo nikra shalem ad shemal shenemar italech lefanai veheye tamim. Okay, that's when it says it after the brit mila. Davar acher, gedola mila shilmalehu lo bara kadosh baruch hu et olamo. Shenemar komar Hashem im lo briti yomam v'alayla chukot shamayim v'aretz lo samti. If it weren't for my brit, I would never have made the world. And what's the brit? They assume it must be brit milah. Okay. Tanya Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Now we're going to have a brayta. The Gemara is going to quote a brayta that also talks about the gedolah milah, and it talks about specifically Moshe. Gedolah milah shekol zchuyot shasa Moshe Rabbeinu lo amdu lo kishenitrashel min hamilah. Okay, all the zchuyot he had didn't stand up to him when he didn't do brit milah. Shenemar v'yivgasheu Hashem v'yivakesh hamito. Right, God meets him and he wants to kill him. Amar Rebbe, chas v'shalom shemoshe Rabbeinu nitrashel min hamilah. It's not that he didn't want to do brit milah. Ela kach amar. Emo ve'etze sakanahi. Shenemar v'yihi b'yom ha'shlishi b'yotam ko'avim. He said, God told me, go back to Mitzrayim. So, and as God told me to go to Mitzrayim, if I go and I give my son a brit milah, well, it's going to delay me. I won't be able to keep God's word. Right? It's almost like God told him to do that, but there's also the commandment that God said on brit milah. But God told him personally, go to Mitzrayim. So he said, I got to go to Mitzrayim. I'll do brit milah later. Right? Because if I go now, we know that it takes 3 days, right? It takes a few days. Even on the third day, they were still, right? Some people say it's dafka on the third day. It's the most and amol ve'esheh shlosha yamim. What if I wait the 3 days? Hakadosh Baruch Hu amar li lech shuv Mitzrayim. Okay, so elam mipnei ma ne'anash Moshe mipnei shenitasek b'malon tchila shenemar v'yihi b'derech b'malon. Okay, what do they say? They darshan the words b'malon. Why does it have to tell you vayihi b'derech b'malon? Why do we need to know he stopped in a malon? So what do they say? He was more worried first with finding a place to stay than he was about doing the Brit Milah. The first he dealt with where are we going to be, and then he dealt with the Brit Milah, which, you know, you can make an argument for, like, that was smart and practical, right? But the point is that Brit Milah takes precedence over that, and that's how great Brit Milah is. And then the Mefreshim explained it, that you have to assume that at that point he was already close enough to Mitzrayim, because otherwise he would still have the problem of Ambaderech. So in other words, once he got close enough to Mitzrayim, there wouldn't be a long journey, that it would be hard to take the baby with the Brit Milah. So what did he do? And as he was already, then he could have just done the Brit Milah, but instead first he got settled, you know, found a place to stay and settled down. And he should have just done the Brit Milah and then found a place to settle. Okay, interesting. We'll see more about this story tomorrow. A lot of different parshaniyot on it. Not all of them are going to be in the text here, but it's an interesting story that the parshanim, you know, struggled with very much, so how to understand.
Should we bring up?